Hey, I was just flipping through this week's Intersect newsletter, and it's got me thinking about something wild.
Oh, you mean the code was always there, looms, punch cards, and computational thinking, issue number 59? That theme from the Intersect.art, you know, it's just so good. It connects everything from like ancient looms right through to our current AI debates. It's exactly why we do the Intersect of Art and Tech podcast.
Yeah, that's the one. And I mean, you've pulled together some truly unexpected stories this time. Like, I saw something about a marble puffer jacket. How does that even tie into code?
It absolutely does. We're going to talk about Analia Saban's exhibition, which connects weaving to code in incredible ways. And then there's Maurizio Catalan's Golden Toilet, which is heading to auction for $10 million. That story, it says so much.
$10 million for a toilet? And then you mentioned someone who's been using neural networks for years, like before it was even called AI art?
That's Christopher Coulondron Thomas. He's been doing this for over a decade, and he's now got major shows. It just makes you think about how we frame things. We'll also check out how NFTs are, well, trying to rebrand themselves as digital collectibles because of, you know, the past few years.
Right, that makes sense. And what about artists getting basically ripped off by AI prompts? That's a whole different kind of conversation.
It really is. And we'll look at who's being used most, like Alphonse Mucha, which is, it's just surprising. Also, there's this interesting paradox with designers. They're mostly skeptical about AI, yet 94% of them still use it daily. It's a real contradiction.
That's wild. And then you've got some mind-blowing astrophotography, which I'm always so impressed by. And then a Chinese art tech biennale with like zero AI anxiety. That sounds completely different from what we hear over here.
Yeah, the astrophotography winners are just incredible. The skill involved is immense. And that biennale in China, it offers a totally fresh perspective on how technology and art converge without all the worries we often hear about. We've got a lot to get into today.
Picture this. There's a marble puffer jacket hanging on a hook at a New York gallery right now. Like actual marble carved to look like a puffy winter coat.
Yeah, that's Analia Saban's work from her flowchart exhibition at Tanya Bonnikdar Gallery. It's running through December 18th, and it's quite something. Her pieces, they just keep hitting you with how she connects everything.
Oh, I saw a little bit about that. She does woven paintings of server fan blades, right? And those encaustic flowcharts that kind of map out AI-like prompts. It's a lot.
She does. And her tapestries, they merge binary logic with loom grids. It really underlines how many textile artists are often working at the very forefront of art and technology. Jurgen has made that observation before, actually.
That's interesting. I hadn't really connected textile art to the tech world that way.
Well, Jurgen's key insight here is that Saban's whole process reveals something fundamental. You know, weaving has always been code. Think about the Jacquard loom. Those programmable punch cards control thread patterns, and that directly inspired Charles Babbage's early computing machines. It's a direct lineage.
So when she like interlaces linen with dried acrylic paint strips or laser carves notebook pages, she's actually showing that textile arts have been computational thinking this whole time. That's wild to consider.
Exactly. She's not just making art. She's illustrating a historical connection, a technological thread, if you will, that runs through centuries of creative work. It makes you consider, too, when does the metaphor become the medium itself?
You know, understanding this reciprocal relationship between technology and artistic expression matters for both creative professionals and technologists today.
It really does. Artists benefit from technological literacy, while technologists gain from creative thinking methodologies. And yeah, we know AI discussions might seem distasteful to some artists, but they're occasionally important because the technology currently impacts both fields significantly.
I appreciate that you're not just focusing on AI because it feels like that's all anyone talks about sometimes.
The thing is, the Intersect covers the full spectrum of tech art convergence, from analog to digital fabrication, generative design to sound synthesis, interactive installations. AI is just one thread in this larger conversation about how computational tools shape creative work and how artistic practices inform technological development. The newsletter provides nuanced analysis without polarization, offering practical insights for professionals who work at this intersection.
So if people want to check that out and get this kind of perspective, where can they go?
You can subscribe to the Intersect newsletter at theintersect.art for analysis of technology's impact on artistic practice and creativity's role in technological progress. The newsletter provides case studies, tool reviews, and perspectives from practitioners who merge technical and creative disciplines in their work.
I can't stop thinking about how perfect this title is, America.
Right? It's Mauricio Cattelan's solid gold toilet, and it's actually heading to auction. Sotheby's has set the starting price at its weight in gold, which is around $10 million. It's wild.
$10 million for a toilet, even a gold one. That just seems like a lot. And it's going to be displayed now, but you can't use it, which is so different from when it was at the Guggenheim.
Exactly. That's what Richard Whittington at ArtNet News reported. This 18-carat, 220-pound functional toilet, it'll be on display before it hits the block on November 18th. Jürgen, you know, he had a really good observation about it. He said, sometimes artwork titles feel arbitrary or deliberately obscure, but America needs no explanation. The name carries the entire critique, the excess, the inequality, the gold plating of everything, the transactional nature of contemporary culture.
That makes so much sense. The title really just says it all. It takes it from being just a golden toilet to something much bigger, a much broader statement.
It really does. Cattelan, he basically created a version of Duchamp's fountain for our current moment. But where Duchamp was asking what qualifies as art, Cattelan is pointing his satire squarely at a nation where, it seems, everything is for sale.
That's a sharp connection to Duchamp. And I remember, wasn't there another version of this that got stolen from somewhere?
You're right. This one is the twin of the version stolen from Blenheim Palace in 2019. It was never recovered, probably melted down for parts. That just adds another layer to the story, I think. You know, speaking of things losing their value and trying to rebrand themselves, I've been looking at We in the Colors' examination of how what they're calling digital collectibles in 2026 are quietly powering gaming economies and loyalty programs right now. The interesting part is you won't hear the term NFT anymore.
Oh, that's interesting. So they're just like changing the name to make it sound better after all the, you know, the hype and then the crash.
Exactly. After the 2022 crash, which, you know, burned a lot of investors and basically turned profile pictures into, well, what people called worthless JPEGs, that rebrand became, I guess, necessary. But Jürgen, the curator of The Intersect, he has some real doubts about this. He said, will a name change really erase the damage? I was genuinely sorry to see the NFT scandals unfold and watch their impact on blockchain's true potential for digital provenance in art.
That makes a lot of sense because it felt like there was so much promise with the idea of, you know, clear ownership and all that for digital art.
He goes on to say, when a hype cycle hits, there's this brief window where everyone glimpses the real possibility. Then the bubble bursts, scandals become headline news, and the reputational wreckage lingers for years, maybe decades. I think that skepticism is not going away just because we swap acronyms. So the big question really is, can utility-focused applications like fractional ownership, cross-chain identity, programmable art, can they overcome that trust deficit, or have we just kind of poisoned the well for a generation?
You know, I've been wondering what happens when an artist who's been using neural networks for over a decade suddenly gets labeled as making AI art. It just seems so reductive somehow.
It really does. And that's exactly what's happening with Christopher Calendron Thomas. Daniel Cassidy from Art News wrote a great piece about him. He's an artist who's been training his own neural networks from scratch, actually hand painting AI generated compositions onto canvas. And he was doing this long before AI art was even a thing anyone talked about in the mainstream. Now he's got these huge shows at Gagosian, MoMA, and the New Museum all at the same time. His works are really powerful. They metabolize colonial art history and reimagine these haunted spaces like Mullivical Beach, where 100,000 Tamil civilians were massacred in 2009. Jürgen, our curator, pointed out something really important about this. He said, the reason I'm curating this piece is because it jumped out at me for the fact that there are many artists who use machine learning and innovation for decades before AI even arrived, and now that work seems perhaps diminished, or we look at it with similar skepticism with which we perceive completely AI-generated content. He also notes that, in reality, artists have spent years innovating approaches of combining manual methods with machine learning before it became what it has become today.
That makes a lot of sense. And it feels a little unfair, doesn't it? Like, here we are debating whether AI art is real art, and artists who've been seriously doing this kind of work for 10 years are finally getting major institutional recognition. And they're the actual ones who are most skeptical of the current AI hype. It's a bit of an ironic situation. So, is there a way to distinguish between artists who use machine learning as one tool in a larger conceptual practice and those who simply prompt their way to a finished piece?
Here's something darkly funny, at least to me. Someone basically created a most ripped off artists Hall of Fame.
Oh, that sounds a bit grim, but I'm curious. What's that about?
Well, it's Capwing's analysis of Midjourney's Discord, you know, those AI image generators. They looked at who gets prompted the most, and Alfonso Mucha leads the pack with over 230,000 prompts, nearly double Rembrandt. Then Wes Anderson is on top for directors and Zaha Hadid for architects. It's wild.
That's really something. So these artists, they're not asking for their styles to be used, are they? That brings up a lot of questions about, well, about ethics.
Exactly. Sarah Barnes at My Modern Met talks about it directly. The ethical concerns around lack of consent, no compensation for these artists, and the real copyright issues that are coming up in courts worldwide. These artists are basically unwilling muses for AI.
It does seem unfair. And Art Nouveau, you said Mucha, who's a huge figure in that style, is at the top. It seems like it keeps popping up.
Jürgen actually was super curious about this too. He wondered why Art Nouveau keeps appearing across all these different disciplines in the prompts. Is it the ornamental complexity that just makes for impressive AI outputs? Or does the style just photograph well in a grid of generated images?
That's a good question. I mean, Art Nouveau is so distinctive, you can definitely spot it. Maybe that makes it easier for the AI to learn and reproduce?
Could be. It's like these artists are getting these achievement unlocked badges for being unwilling participants in AI's training data.
So I was looking at something from Dezeen reporting on a University of Exeter Digit Lab survey, and it says 81% of designers believe AI dulls originality. That's a huge number, way higher than writers who came in at 63%.
Yeah, that statistic really jumps out, doesn't it? But here's the interesting part, the real twist. The same survey found that 94% of creatives, designers included, are actually using AI in some part of their process now. So they fear it, but they're still reaching for it.
That's such a contradiction. It's like they're worried about it, but can't quite step away. What do you make of that?
It speaks to what Jürgen has been saying for a while. He frames it this way. We keep talking about AI replacing creativity and originality, almost as if that's the intended goal. Most creatives, he says, seem genuinely worried about this. But when you have 9 out of 10 creatives using these tools while at the same time fearing them, then maybe we need to shift the conversation entirely.
Shift it from what exactly?
From that replacement anxiety to instead the enhancement possibility. It's about how we frame the discussion. Is this a crisis of creativity? Or, you know, is it a crisis of how we're choosing to frame the conversation around what AI can do for art and design? Now for something that's definitely not AI generated, and it's truly breathtaking. We've been looking at the Royal Observatory Greenwich ZWO Astronomy Photographer of the Year 2025 winners.
Oh, I love these images. They're always so incredibly detailed.
They really are. The Andromeda Core by Weitong Liang, Qi Yang, and Chuhung Yu took top honors, captured from Spain's Astrocamp Observatory. The winners shared £10,000 in prize money, plus BBC Sky at Night magazine subscriptions, and the exhibition is currently at London's National Maritime Museum.
It's incredible to think about the level of detail they capture, the distances involved, and just the sheer beauty of it all. It takes so much more than just a camera, doesn't it?
It takes so much more. And you know, our curator, Jürgen, he's actually experimented with astrophotography himself. He told me how much patience, equipment, knowledge, and sheer effort it takes just to start getting usable images. He even sold his telescope years ago with an excuse about the skies not being dark enough. But really, he admitted he lacked the technical skills and the patience, plus the willingness to travel to dark sky spots. It takes real dedication.
That really puts it into perspective, how much goes into those winning photos. It's not just pointing and shooting at the night sky. Would you invest the time to master this technically demanding art form? Reading art news from China shows something interesting, and it's quite a contrast to what we often hear in the West.
Yeah, that's right. The China Hangzhou Art and Technology Biennale at the Yuhang Art Museum has this distinct approach. What's different is there's this palpable lack of anxiety about AI destroying creativity.
No anxiety at all? That's really striking, given how much discussion we have here about those concerns. What kind of work are they showing?
It's a huge show. Over 160 artists from more than 20 countries. And the scope is incredible. It spans everything from digital reconstructions of 5,000-year-old Liangzhu jade artifacts to space-based computing and deep-sea submersibles. The whole thing is framed around cultural, ecological reconstruction amidst technological iteration.
That's a powerful theme. So Jürgen mentioned something about this, right? About the different perspective.
He did. He was really thinking about whether this is what we'd expect from, you know, what some might view as a totalitarian regime, or if it's simply realpolitik, more practical than ideological. He pointed out that while Western art institutions wrestle with ethical frameworks and artist displacement concerns, this exhibition just celebrates the convergence of art and technology as an inevitable ascent. It even echoes Flaubert's observation that art and science will meet again at the summit.
That makes a lot of sense. It sounds like they're just seeing it as an evolution rather than a threat.
Exactly. It's about how these things naturally come together.
Maybe there's something to learn from looking sideways at how different cultures frame the same technological moment. It's a completely different lens. You know, from Analia Sabin's marble puffer jackets, showing us that weaving has always been code, to artists like Christopher Coolindren Thomas, who've been using machine learning for decades before we even called it AI art. This issue really makes you think about how we frame these conversations around technology and creativity.
It absolutely does. And it underlines that idea, right? That cross-disciplinary knowledge between technology and the arts creates stronger work in both fields. Technologists who understand artistic principles build more human-centered products, while artists who grasp technical tools expand their creative capabilities in such interesting ways.
Exactly. It's that constant give and take.
And if you want to keep exploring this unique intersection, the Intersect newsletter is this interesting weekly resource examining how technology shapes artistic practice and how creativity informs technological development. Subscribe at theintersect.art for analysis, case studies, and practitioner perspectives from the intersection of art and technology. Thanks for joining us on the Intersect podcast, and we'll see you next week.